Hello and welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place that ask questions future we don't evolve. We just level up here at WAFest with Thomas, DMT, Chatfield, Mike, the Mike guy, Rogers, and DC, I don't have a middle name for you, Bruins. Is it the same one?
Yeah. DC, that's what the C is for.
Oh, okay. Hello.
Good to know. Or you.
Dan, DMT's cousin's Chatfield?
Bruins. No. We'll work on it. It's okay.
Okay.
It's a work in progress. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. All right.
You can't force middle nicknames. They just have to come.
I always force it, and then eventually one works.
A few of them stick.
A few of them. Unless it's Roe, then it's anything with an A.
Yep.
All right. Talking D&D, specifically the announcement that we're going to make on this channel with everyone on this table that is potentially, well, three of us for sure involved, one of us in talks. Thomas, take us away. What project are we working on in this next month?
Oh, I wasn't prepared for this grand speech.
Yeah.
Sorry. We finally decided to kind of upgrade our game.
Yep.
With the D&D. I know we tried it in Don't Evolve Me before, and it was just audio, which was fun and everything, and it was a good experiment. But Jake and I are going to start a co-project, and anybody else that was wanting to get in on it, we're looking for people. When we're going to actually, like, tackle this, D&D streaming episodes.
Kind yes.
of, so we're coming up with a kind of its own show that we can kind of separate from the Don't Evolve Me podcast, but be connected to it at the same time.
Yeah.
It's the same members and everything. So yeah, that's the kind of the synopsis. That was the idea. So now we kind of agreed to do, we're going to do at least 1 8 episode season for sure. Kind of see how it goes, see how the response is, see how we like it.
Yeah.
And then, who knows? We could be something else.
Yeah. I'm really excited. Working title for it, I believe, for at least season one is The Bleak.
Yes.
Which is something that you've worked on. We developed a world together, a map that I worked on previously for other fantasy genres. Kind of told you this. I've been working on this map for about 10 years now. And I was very much, if I find a project that I wanted to, like, solely, like, that's what we use it for.
Yeah.
I was all in. So now we're developing this world, The Bleak. Explain the world a little bit. Especially for Dan here, who might be an artist working for us, potentially. We're in talks.
Yeah. What my plan is, I personally have never experienced this in any D&D games that I have played.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to do kind of a not your general, let's stop the big bad evil guy from making the world end.
Yeah.
I want to make a D&D campaign that's set in a world that the big bad guy already won.
Yep.
And every living or sentient being is now not necessarily fighting each other. They're just, it's going to be like Fallout or Mad Max type of post-apocalyptic, something bad's happened, everyone's like fighting for survival. But set in the D&D world, Mad Max with dragons and tieflings and dwarves and stuff like that. So that's kind of my general idea, what I wanted to start off with. So I just picked the, generic Greek god, Erebus, he's the primordial god of darkness, came in and destroyed the realms of all the gods. And now the planet and the continent is just consumed in an internal darkness. I also wanted it to be a very grim, dark setting as well. Like the Warhammer-esque setting where it's that's kind of the reason why I named it The Bleak.
Yeah.
The darkness that, is impenetrable, that people don't live in and only demons exist in. It's a bleak existence. So I wanted it to just kind of like really get that Dark Souls-y, grungy, grim, dark vibe in a post-apocalyptic D&D.
Yeah. I think it was funny because we randomly decided to do this when we were hanging out.
Yep.
And we were just like, oh, let's, we'd love to do it. Yeah, let's do it. And we're on it. And I think, what is it, like a day or two later, me and Brandon both had character sheets for you.
Yeah, you guys actually had character sheets even before I even said anything, what I even was thinking of doing. So you guys had to like readjust a little bit.
But yeah, you're like, do not make your character, do not make your backstory. And I did. And I was like, you know what? I'm not. My whole thing was, I'm going to approach this as an actor, not a writer. I'm not going to write this whole backstory. I'm just like, what's the purpose? What was my character going for? What's the inspiration? What's the mannerisms? And even then, because I'm thinking like peacetime, a peacetime era, like Dungeons and Dragons is.
And even then, when you said you had all those cues in your mind of like, yep, don't go too bored, overboard. I got to see how many graphic novels have you written so far?
Two.
Two? Okay.
Well, I didn't.
It's great. I love it. I love it.
After.
Fair.
Beforehand.
To be perfectly fair, yes, it was.
I didn't have to throw out like everything that like I came up with.
You know, I think you're just vibing, having a good time with it. But yeah, so that's the general thing. I don't want to like spoil too much for any of the players or anything here, but we're just going to do a random encounter. More of the, you guys don't know each other. You're at a certain place because whatever you want. And that's what I'm going to leave to your backstory. Why are you at this caravan trade town?
Right.
So I kind of am going to leave it to that. And it's going to be not, I don't think your typical D&D adventure. I think I'm going to start it hot. So yeah. I think it's going to be fun. Yes. We're gonna start off with some bad stuff happening.
All right, Dan, what are your thoughts? I've been in this world for about a month. You're relatively fresh.
Sure.
Shoot him.
That on?
Yep. Now you're on.
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. Good. There we go. Hello. So less thoughts of this moment, more questions. Do you have an idea of like something? Describe to me a scene, a moment, something to sell the atmosphere of the world. Something like, gosh, what's the one anime where the guy like punches a bunch of times and then the dude explodes? You're already dead. Kenshiro, right?
One Punch Man.
No, it's an older one.
My bad.
One of the like establishing shots of that project, that world, is like a skyscraper with a goddamn like tanker ship through it, just like through it, like thrown through, and that's your opening image, and that's how you know this world is fucked. What is your this world is fucked moment? Like, what's the vibe that you're going?
Oh, okay,
with?
I think the Megakin would be a good feel.
Yeah.
For it. So one of the factions that I came up with was this place called Megatown. And so imagine like kind of a medieval setting.
I don't want to imagine, but we're going to do this anyway. Oh, okay.
Am I going to tell you what
it is? Yes, okay. Yes.
What I'm going to tell you, I'm going to show you how it is here. So it's a medieval setting. It's set in a really like murky, gross swamp. Everything around you, there's no light, remember? Mm-hmm. It's the bleak, where there's not light, there is just this like pitch black, misty darkness. So everywhere that there is not light, it's just dark around you.
Yeah.
What you can see is this deep, dark, stinky mire with these like decrepit shanties all over the place that are kind of built up on stilts and have like walkways. And walking through here are people known as we call them the Mire Kin.
Okay.
And what they have done is like built up a symbiotic relationship with something called the Bleak Fly.
Okay.
Or I can't remember if we said Bleak Fly or Clove Fly.
Mm-hmm.
And since everything, basically, the Bleak is where the demons. So if you go into the Bleak without a light source, they're going to sense your soul flame. They're going to come in there, and like every demon within the area is going to start there and go there.
Very much the Mists, Fallout,
yep, the Mists,
Far Harbor,
yeah, yep.
Baldur's Gate, Shadowlands.
And so. The Mirekin have this symbiotic relationship that they've developed with the glowflies. They allow them, the glowflies, to lay their larvae inside their body. So think of a botfly.
Mm-hmm.
And so imagine this really, all the people there are really like gaunt and sick and pale because they constantly have these glowfly larvae in their body. And what we get out of that, what the living get out of it, is that these botfly larvae glow with an iridescent blue light.
Okay.
So they have this strange, like, symbiotic relationship, and they just kind of, like, you know, it's just a, yeah, that's probably one of my, it's one of the good idea of it. I guess there's a few other things, but, sorry, are you getting the feel a little bit more?
Yeah, it sounds like situations where the people, species, the environment is like pushed into a state of like extreme survival,
yes,
and needs to adapt strange survival mechanisms, correct, in order to like exist and thrive in this world.
Precisely. The biggest city that we came up with too was a place that we called Pyre Town.
It's okay.
All pyre, like a giant that you'd burn a witch on,
yeah,
right? And Pyre Town is in the ruins of some ancient, completely forgotten city,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, it was a metropolis at some point. So, you know, a Baldur's Gate, a Winterdeep, you know, one of those type of,
I heard Fallout, my mind went to Diamond City.
Like Diamond City or whatever. But yeah, some big, like, but it's, right now, all it is so they basically dug down into the ground. The citizens have, like, dunked down this pit. And in the pit is called the pyre.
Mm.
And there's pretty much sole existence for most of the population is just going out in exploratory parties into the old, you know, 1,000-year-old city, mm, and getting anything combustible. And that's how they keep their city alive. In this pit, they just have this massive fire continuously burning.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that can't be used or recycled goes into the pyre.
I really like the world because it's all about, like, the idea of light.
Yes.
Light. In D&D, like, there's a lot of spells that deal with light, but oftentimes it's ignored. And that's the first thing I noticed. I re-looked at my character, I'm like, oh, dancing lights. That's a cantrip I get right away. I'm like, that's worthless in any other game. In this game, I'm like, that saves me. That is the reason why I can go out to the bleak.
So, on top of the bleak, basically, like I was saying, so Erebus went through each domain, so almost like the cleric domains in 5th edition, so yeah, you get life and fire, Tempest, that sort of thing like that. And each area kind of the map we've kind of distinguished as, like, this is kind of where the Tempest domain is, and the people that worship these sort of gods.
Or used to.
So now, what our kind of lore is that these gods have been so diminished that they're almost forgotten about, and so that clerics really only exist in a small hand,
mm-hmm,
clerics or paladins. So instead of being able to empower, you know, hundreds of people with your god's power, they're so diminished and forgotten about that only 8 guys at a time can become a Tempest cleric type of thing.
Okay.
Anyways, the only one that actually survived relatively unscathed, like 50, knocked down by like 50%, would be the Light Domain, which makes sense that it's the antithesis of primordial darkness.
Right.
So on top of the baddie, the big bad Erebus, you know, the god of darkness, I want to make this really cool, like, post-apocalyptic medieval Catholic church that is the Light Domain.
Okay.
Because they control one of the most pivotal things, and that is transportation between settlements. So they have these massive, like, land wagons where they use their light domain powers, their cleric powers, to have a constant beacon,
mm-hmm,
where they can travel through the void. So basically, they have this monopoly, and they're kind of this corrupt Inquisition, Catholic Church, you know, type of vibe. They use their power to keep their monopoly of basically the whole continent, because they're the ones that basically facilitate 90% of the travel in this world.
Yeah, it sounds like in this world, tithes and taxes are basically the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of the general vibe that we're going for. Like I said, in Leak, we've come up with, like, lots of different things. Like, we're considering having, raiders. So think of a raider, you know, from any, whatever, a thief, you know, but instead of, like, stealing your coin first, they're going to steal your soul, because one of the technologies for lights, or one of the magics for light, is blood magic or necromancy,
mm-hmm,
where people have these soul lanterns that slowly consume a person's soul once they're entered in there and they burn with a light.
And it's forever.
It's for, yeah, but so, and then, yeah, so that's part of the thing that raiders do, is they're going through, they live in the bleak, but they, you know, use this, you know, much more sinister form of light.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea is just, like, how are these different cultures adapting to these very specific survival?
Soul Harbor.
Yeah. So what's up?
Soul Harbor.
Yep.
Are they... It's a guarded city where they let you in. Everyone can come in. It's peaceful. You live a very peaceful, violent-free life. But the kicker is, when you die, they take your soul.
Yep. You become a lamppost.
Mm.
But of course, they're playing it off more so as, you know, this is a great honor. Your soul will exist forever. But they don't realize that it's just slowly burning for, you know, half of eternity.
So it's like that happy, like, oh yeah, this place protects me, but it's really abuse of power. Very,
like I said, a very Dark Souls type of vibe, a very, you know, very grim, dark, very setting.
And we have, go ahead.
I'm sure Dan's familiar with this term, but maybe you could explain it for Tom and Jake. So I'm getting Chia Roscaro as an inspiration.
One more time.
Are you familiar with chiaroscuro?
Chiaroscuro, like rendering? Yeah, like Caravaggio style?
Yeah.
You just want me to like go through and sort of explain that?
Well, you know, this is the description of the bleak and the way light works. It just makes me think of that older style.
What kind of, like, explain the style? I guess I am not familiar with that.
So chiaroscuro, it was a style of painting developed shortly after the Renaissance, mostly pioneered by, or at least like made famous by, an absolutely buck wild painter. His name is Caravaggio. Was famous for like getting into duels over random bullshit, dying of syphilis. Was like really, really terrible to like wait staff at restaurants. Once like held a dagger to someone's face because like they overcooked his artichokes. Like, dude was nuts. But had a very distinct style of like extreme light and extreme dark.
Okay.
And like most of like the backgrounds of his paintings are this like lovely, like rich dark reds and blacks, and then just like the characters, the actual images, the people are lit from one direction, usually with very stark bright lights. So it's like you're carving a person out of the dark. It's very much like a precursor to like noir film photography, like that sort of idea, where like if that like classic idea of like someone's face is half covered in shadow and you just see the eye and like a silhouette and like some rim light behind it. That's chiaroscuro.
Is this similar to like the Batman animated series where they started out with black sheet of paper and they animated everything else?
Like, I could be like, good, because that's really kind of the vibe that I'm going for. So if we're all kind of like, you know, people are understanding it, I'm glad that's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. And then I wanted to do this very interesting setup, but I was like, okay, so there's got to be a way for them. If they can't do it themselves, how are they going to get in places? Otherwise, they're going to be stuck in the opening center forever.
Well, it sounds to me like you have a world where, and maybe this is something you can like lean in further with the story. You have a world where the gods have been killed, or the gods have, in some way or other, have abandoned you. All that you have left is each other. Right?
Yeah. That's one of the main things that I mentioned in the synopsis when I sent it to the other players was that there's really not like, you identify as tiefling or halfling or human or whatever like that, but now it's the demons and the living.
Okay.
It's basically boiled down to that. So in a lot of the world, they're very like surviving in clusters, however they.
Are you still running on the like the distinctions between like different races, species?
For mechanical purposes, yes.
Yeah,
and we still want to, like, I'm not going to say that like it's completely non-existent. Like, there can be a halfling zone somewhere. You know, it doesn't have to specifically be like that. But in general, it's more seen as like it's either, you know, death in the bleak or it's being with the living.
Yeah. So you like, you don't have dark vision because you were an elf born of a long elf bloodline. You have dark vision because you happen to come from a town that was like
dominantly
pitch dark.
Yeah, so. And then we've also like thrown that around the idea of custom races as well too, just for you know. I forget what maybe Jake you can.
Oh yeah. Well, first I just want to say you killed my whole racial theme vibe going on
a little bit. I'm
pushing.
I'm still throwing it around. I want a reason why the Light Domain hates the Drow.
Elves,
I think it makes sense because I think the Light Domain is going to go after groups of people, whether it be like professions like a sorcerer or a race of people that can naturally produce light or have dark vision, and kind of be like, "Oh, you're a heretic because you know you're helping people learn how to make light."
Yeah, you're monopoly.
You're messing with our monopoly, so yeah. The Light Domain Inquisition's knocking at your door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the background of my character, Roar. Rural Plain Street is his name, where he started out in the city. He lives with his dad and his mom in this really tight-knit city in the Slight Domain, and they kids find out that he's a drow, that he can make his own light, and then they have to escape. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it has a lot of creative ideas that we can make for world building.
The other race, and this is a race that I think Mike might be interested. I was thinking of Mike when I thought of this race. Right now, with the help of AI, they came up with the name Denari. I enjoy the name, but it's a working title. It's the idea of, it's like the drow, but the human version of drows. Neanderthals. Neanderthals who, instead of dying out, they went to the underground, the Underdark. They came with this ability, and they started to evolve with luminescent lights in their skin, possibly with gems or other things that help them glow in the dark. And then once they came back out, they realized the world is now bleak, and they were able to survive in it. Then, thus creating kind of a secondary like race that is, in a way, thriving in this world.
Yeah. That was my idea, too. I wanted there to be some places in the world that are actually doing okay. Like,
yeah.
You know, every place sucks compared to, you know, what life should be like, you know, in a perfect, you know, D&D game.
Mm-hmm.
Every place is terrible. It's going to have shitty conditions. People are going to be dying constantly, but there are places that are of relative safety and, you know, places that are slightly less crappy.
Yeah, I really like the idea. I mean, you could, as like players, being the light in the dark,
yep.
Being the fun in the seriousness, being the ones that bring back the light into the world. And this could be what we were talking about, Dan, or the mission statement that you kind of brought up, the Craig Mazin. What is...
Be the light you want to see in the world?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
I mean, you aren't too far off with kind of the generic. Like I said, I wanted this to just be a good introduction that we can get our feet wet in this, mm-hmm. And so I kind of made it like a simple storyline. You know, that is going to be your guys' role. You guys are going to be light and hope.
Yeah.
You know? So,
like my immediate idea is you have a character that learns the cantrips light, right? Just like gets the light cantrip. And like their whole goal, teach as many people as they can the whole thing,
yep.
Yeah.
Before the church.
Yep.
Ready, go. Have fun.
And I want that, like, I want there to be that always looming threat of, like, you know, the Inquisition might be knocking down our door, you know, type of thing.
Well,
along with having to deal with our mission set forth by... Mm.
Well, I think of, like, the bleak cultists that you kind of came up with. The ones with, like, the leeches in their head that is now, they kind of act as a horde, as, like, a unison, in a sense.
Yep.
The idea of, like, if there is a small settlement, if there is, like, one light source, or there's multiple, once you take those light sources, that town's gone. And I, like, I'm trying to imagine how you're going to do our Helgen introduction, but I imagine it's something similar there. Please don't tell me. I don't want to know. I don't want to know the premise.
Keep it fun.
Yeah.
Hey, you're finally awake. You're about to be executed. All that
fun
stuff.
Yep. You actually come in on a wagon.
Yeah.
They,
very original.
They you go down. The guy gets his head cut off in front of you, and then you're next.
Yeah.
And then
And that's the way to character down. Creation? But that, yeah.
And then God Erebus comes down, destroys the city that you're in,
mm-hmm.
And you get away, and you become the chosen.
Yeah.
Okay, where does everybody else come in?
I don't know.
When's
they're all behind you. They're all going to get executed.
Once Mike's character come in, do you have a name yet for your character?
I might go with Relictus. I'm not sure.
Yep. Oh, a reading.
What's that?
Relictus, your character from Dan's campaign?
Oh, I did use that name in Dan's campaign.
You did?
Oops.
It's a good name.
Well, it's kind of the same vibe. He was a half-ghost guy, and now I'm in, like, Grimdark. Ghosty world. So
yeah.
I guess I just gravitated to him that I like. I've got a question now.
What level is everyone starting at, and how lethal is this game planned to be?
I want it to be more lethal than your average. I want the chance of when you're traveling. I don't want it to be like as high of the death chance as when you're fighting, but I want there to always be the chance that if you guys decide to completely fuck off into the woods with no planning and no light source, you're gonna die.
That should almost be like your first image. is someone being torn to shreds by demons.
Yeah.
Maybe a good initial oh, this guy's gonna F off in the woods because he isn't aware of the dangers, or he doesn't believe in the dangers, and then it gets torn to pieces.
Yeah, so I want to make it a little more deadlier than most campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't want to be punishing. I want to have it be playable, but still
hard. Yeah, so it sounds to me like you kind of need to aim for the lower level start entries.
I want to do one start. Maybe after the first one, I was considering just bumping up because maybe you get blessed or something, and then go right to three so we can get into our fun stuff.
Yeah,
I haven't decided fully on it, but I want to do low levels. I want you to feel.
Well, and the thing about D&D is once you get past a certain level, combat becomes really swingy. It's really hard to control exactly how much danger your players are in. At a certain point, it becomes how many D8s can you actually roll on this fireball, and that changes the entire battlefield completely. Lower level, more control, more tactile punch, and more just having to be clever and having to physically do stuff as opposed to.
My goal for the first season, also for the first 8 episodes, I want to do level 1 through 10.
Yeah.
So I want us to end at 10. We're going to do some cool and dramatic. But then I want to leave it open that we might be able to continue on this campaign if we decide to continue with this role, continue on with this project.
Wait, are we doing level 10 all the way up to season 1?
All the way through. You will end at level 10 by the end of season 1.
Oh, we're leveling up mid-season.
Yep, so pretty quick, real quick.
Pretty cool. I'm excited for it. Let's go through the characters that we got so far confirmed. My character is going to be a drow bard. We have Mike's character is going to be a dual wielding fighter, halfling, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Possibly named Relictus.
Possibly named Relictus. Probably named something else. Since you reminded me that I did just use that.
It was a good name. I liked it.
It was a fine name.
Yeah. We have Brandon's character. He's going to be joining us again. He's going to be Paul, the wizard plasmoid, who's trying to fit into society.
Okay.
We have Don's cleric trickster. He's going to be the deception domain, I believe.
Yep.
Don't know much more other than that. He's kind of based around his personal life. Coming back from death, he's going to laugh in the face of death. And Braun, from New Guy Tony, Fire Goliath Barbarian.
Fire Goliath Barbarian, yep.
Seems like a pretty mixture. Could potentially do stealth with the giant fire guy.
Yep. I was just all half-fire giant walking around with you guys, real sneaky.
Super sneaky.
With community as the reference point that you do not understand, and I kind of liked it, but also you should just watch community.
I'm also just going to not watch it, so I never get anything that you guys are trying to do.
You are missing out on an amazing show.
Maybe. Hey, we got to do the Convince Me episode some other time.
I'm just picturing, kids running up to this guy in the middle of a village, lighting torches and running away, and he gets smaller every time. So I'm going to ask something that I think is going to help you, but it's a question for the players, and specifically for the players and, characters and character creation.
Yes.
We have races, we have classes, we have the whole, general vibe. Something that has helped myself when I'm running games for people is I'll take your characters and say, okay, two questions for them. One, what is the one thing in the world they want more than anything else? And two, why can't they get it yet? What is keeping them from getting the thing that they want? Which lets you just dangle, hey, here's that thing that you want, and you make them go and do the thing.
Dangle the old carrot in front of them.
Yeah.
And that's my hope too. I want a little bit of a backstory because I want to give personal, meaningful magic items that aren't game breaking.
Yeah.
To start off the game with. I want to incorporate maybe the Inquisitor that killed your dad or something like that, or whatever, whatever was in your backstory.
My dad's alive, man.
We're working on that. Was going to kill your dad.
Well, now you have to go rescue your dad.
Yep.
Because your dad's been kidnapped by the bad guys, and is going to be drained for all of his life. Sorry.
True story.
I mean, yeah, that's what happens when I make, background characters. And in my comic, it is up. I did write a comic origin for my character. My whole thing is, I'm just going to set Tom up with a bunch of things that he can do with if he wants to. You have a cool Jannari villain.
If I am going to...
I have a father that you can kill and kidnap. I have a mom who's either dead or disappeared.
Oh, it was your mom. Maybe.
Yeah, she's the one who's kidnapped.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I will happily George R. R. Martin all of your backstory characters. I will blend.
Yeah.
My question for you is, do I have to come up with a second character?
I mean, I guess
it feels like this might be,
probably might have. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
You should at least like be in the mindset of I should need to roll another character in a moment.
Yeah. I think for my advice for you as a DM, even in if this world is very dark, very bleak, very easy to get killed, I think death is an easy option. If there is a character who is potentially going to die or like is very on the brink of death, ask yourself this question: is there something more interesting than death? Yeah, is there something that's more gratifying than this character dying?
Are you talking about NPCs or like
NPCs, characters?
Oh, yeah. Like, there's all sorts of options. Like, yeah. You leave somebody for dead, they get taken by a raider party, they become a raider boss 10 levels later.
There you go.
And then they come back for you because you left them to die in the bleak.
Yeah.
To get ripped apart by demons. So, yeah, no, there's all
like, whatnot. Does this character die, or do we have to go rescue him next session?
Precisely.
I hope that at least makes the setting a little clearer. Not clearer. It's not clear. It's dark and bleak. It's terrible.
Oh, I'm excited.
You've done a good job. You've muddied the waters.
Yep.
You've added the smoke to the room. Everything's covered in chiaroscuro.
Yeah, and then also, I don't know, have you, you know who John Blanche is? He's a 40K artist, and he is known for the style called what, Blanchetsu, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. If you look at any of the, like, third edition.
Yeah, all this sort of, like, 90s style. Yeah, he's doing this. Super bright.
It's got like a lot of blacks, reds, and yellows.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And it's dark. It's a grim dark side. So, yeah. But they call it Blanchetsu. It's pretty interesting. Kind of what I'm going for.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Very right. Noir. Very. What was the guy's name?
Caravaggio. And the style is chiaroscuro.
Like,
interesting.
Beautiful. Yeah, right. I'm excited. I think we have some potential going. So maybe one episode. DC Bruins can come and do a side character or something.
Oh, for sure.
I'd love to be a goblin.
You got the voice down. No, I am down for anyone's involvement, even like in our campaign, if they want to come either help you with like some characters or come be a guest star.
I want to have our main floor party, and then I want to have maybe weekly, bi-weekly rotating
guests
that they can show up for an episode or two. They don't have to commit the entire, entire 8 episodes.
Yeah.
They want to get their feet wet or something.
I'm already juggling like 4 other games right now. Okay, so if I'm jumping in, you need to kill me in a spectacular
way. I would absolutely kill
you. I need to explode under a giant's mallet. I need to dissolve into acid goo. Fucking murder.
Here's your seed for you. Have him be the first part of our party. You just die immediately. There's your seed.
Yeah, that guy that you were talking about.
The guy who gets his head chopped off, that's him.
Yeah, that's him. The guy that made us all realize how effed up the world is. Yeah.
Or are you the guy running from the arrow? Or running and then gets shot with the arrow?
I'm going to go physically check for traps with my body by stepping.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be it'll be fun. I'm excited. No. Really excited.
I am, yes. Thrilled about it. Excited to get started. Excited for everyone's involvement, your involvements. Mike, I pointed to you. No one can see you. There you go.
Mike over there, that guy.
Mike
there.
Over.
The Mike guy.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Yeah, say hello in the mic.
Hello.
That's better.
Hello, Mike.
All right. How much more time do you got, Tom?
A little bit more time, yeah.
All right, should we just talk D&D in general?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. So I got this segment called Ask a DM. So I know we've all I know 3 of us have DM'd.
Yeah, I've been running a game for like 5 years.
Your goblin voice tells me yes.
Well, I don't know if the council grants you the rank of DM at this moment.
Okay, you know what? Say your grievances, Mike.
I'm just saying, a year ago today.
Yes.
You said you were going to do some DMing.
Yes. That is fair.
Mm-hmm. He DM'd another game. Yeah.
Three. Tom was there campaigns. For 2 of them. Huh?
3 campaigns?
No, 2 sessions.
Three sessions in a one shot turned into a mini campaign because I don't know what a one shot is.
Nope. He didn't. One shots always turn into mini campaigns. That's what they do. You're
more like a dungeon intern than a dungeon
engineering master.
Yeah. So the world that I was DMing was kind of this like village conflict of there's a lot of corruption in this village and there's a bunch of factions that just kind of circled around each other.
You're trying to do Game of Thrones political intrigue for a bunch of new players that had never played D&D.
Yeah,
it was for session zero. I agree. Yeah. And then session two, I just decided to throw a bunch of goblins at him, and it was a great time. So I pivot, and then I added more simpler quests with the intrigue of like what's going on here. And then, you know, people are getting married, so I haven't been able to finish it. Might just be scrapped. We'll see. But yes, I did say I was going to do a one-shot for our group. I have not yet. We're in talks. I like the idea of the cultist. So in our main campaign, Mike has a bunch of stuff going on. And one of it is a few things. You want to explain it? I feel like you can explain it better than I can.
No, please okay. Do.
So, we follow a lot of cults. One of us being the god of Gorgrath, the frog god. I don't even know what the reference is.
Oh, it's not a reference. It was just a name I found. Or actually, it was based on an adventure by a guy called Nerzugal, I believe his name was. Found it on a forum somewhere.
Okay. Gorgrath, the frog god, we two of us got very enthralled with them, and now we follow these cultists everywhere. So my idea was, because we have a church in Neverwinter, and we have these a bunch of cultists, and we're just recruiting for our god.
Each of us make a Gorgrath cultist and kind of go on some random little side adventure.
That is exactly what I'm thinking for a one-shot. I'm thinking cultist gang war.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, those cultists of Vecna guys? Nah, they gotta go.
And, you know, purple cult... Wait, what are we? We're the red cultists, right? That's...
Yeah, red and black.
Yeah, and then we met purple cultists. I tried recruiting them. You said no, or your character said no.
Yeah. The captain said no.
So, yeah, I'm thinking, like, that's all I got for you, because you... messaged me, I think, yesterday.
Starting point.
And I'm just like, you know what? I'll come up with something. Yeah. Cultist gang war. That's all I got.
Like it.
All right. Ask a DM, what is your guys' most memorable character that you DM'd?
That I DM'd for?
Yeah. Like, most rememberable. Like, the one that you're like, ooh, yeah, that was a great character. Everyone's thinking.
I like Mike's character in Rogue Trader.
Because
he was not power gaming and just wanted to be this really smart dude that had lots of money. He played a Seneschal in Rogue Trader, who is basically like Rogue 4x4.
Yeah.
Where they are just terrible at combat for the most part. And he just played into it. He's like, yeah, what would a rich dude do? He'd buy two grenade launchers. And he's not proficient in any of them and just lobs grenades and they scatter all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
He always had a plan B in his pocket, and it was a vortex grenade that sucks stuff into the warp.
Oh.
And so right at the end, he finally got to use his plan B nuke. Also, he had a digi weapon, which is just like rings that shoot laser beams.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a meltagun digi weapon. And he went to go shake hands with whatever gang member that we were gang leader that we were trying to do. I don't know, something.
Yeah, it was a mutant down in the sewers or something. In the party, we were trying to negotiate with them or something. Mutants. Yeah, they were mutants. That's why I killed him, because I was like, yeah, well, we'll pretend to go along with it to get close to this guy, but also fuck mutants.
Because, you know, space racism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good old 40. Anyways, but yeah, that was probably, I think I like that character a lot.
All right. Dan or Mike got one?
I've got a...
You can say a few. That's fine.
I've got two that are coming to mind right now.
All right.
From my own players, my own campaign. One of them, her name is Astra Ichiria.
Okay.
Tiefling. She's supposed to be a sorcerer, but she's like worships a like a homebrew god of like knowledge and learning.
Yep.
So she's like very bookish, very like really eager to. I want to find the book. I want to open the book. I want to read all the words and share the knowledge with all of the world. She's adorable. She's wonderful. Mm-hmm. She's got this like horn that goes into like a full loop, which is very cool.
Interesting.
And she like the player is also an artist, so she just like draws all these fantastic like images of like every time something happens, how Astra reacts to this image. But when you put her daughter in danger, she becomes the most terrifying motherfucker you could possibly imagine. One of those people that, like, when they are threatened, they just speak very softly, and they say, you're going to walk out of this room right now, and no one will get hurt. If you don't do that, then, like, super commits to that bet, and the player is, at the same time, really committed to like playing a character, and really loves like the crunchy battle style of like that mid to high level D&D. So that player, she is always able to come up with like the craziest combos, like the craziest, like, I noticed this thing, I'm gonna do this, this, and this, and completely upset your entire strategy. It's amazing. Wow. It's wonderful. I fucking love it. The other one is that character's husband.
Okay.
Who in this plot is a double agent, triple agent, who thinks he is working, or it's like says he is working for the big bad of the campaign, this massive like fascist dragon who's trying to take over the world, whatever, right? This dragon has told the husband, his name is Cairn, right? He said, Cairn, you're spying on the kingdom for me. And as your wife is away doing a whole, like, another thing, another intrigue plot, a political campaign, that when things go south, it becomes the bloodbath. We do the full red wedding thing. This dragon tells Cairn, okay, so this kid that you have with all these, like, weird, like, magical powers of fluctuation, I need you to kidnap that kid, put them in a time bubble, and bring them to me.
Hmm.
And the player fucking did it.
Damn.
I was not expecting them to. So I was like, oh, you turn into a dragon and you take your and you fly out of the city. Okay, give me a week. I need to invent a Fortress of Doom. I was expecting this. Which was it? Just like her, that player's ability to commit to the bit and like really go hard, like make tough, like emotional decisions. Oh, it's beautiful. We're still dealing with the fallout of that bullshit.
Nice.
That's like, I feel like that's like the greatest like characters when you like make those ripple effects, and it's just
yes. Oh shit! I need to invent something.
I find in the brief amount of time I DM'd my first Haley from when Tom was there, just kept challenging every little plot point of like, oh, we're gonna go for a hunt. I don't hunt animals. I don't do this. That like that challenge of like, okay, I'm gonna make you intrigued. And I'm like, okay, what is she motivated by? She's motivated by animals, wants to save animals. Like, okay, I'm going to throw a bunch of animals in. And I'm going to throw a bunch of like different things that motivate and just get her going. And that was like my focus for the next how many sessions. It's like, all right, let's motivate this person because everybody else gets in and finding that like. And I realized like by doing that, it just made my interest in my like game more dynamic.
Yeah, you like you feed off.
Yeah. Mike.
Well, I'd like to say that I love all of my players and characters equally.
But which one do you love the most?
More. Well, I'm going to continue the bromance here. It was actually Tom's character, the halfling.
Which one?
In Staghammer.
Oh, Dorian?
No, not Dorian, the halfling.
Mouse.
You played. Mouse, yeah. Mouse Lightfoot. That was my favorite character to DM for. It was just, he just played it really well. It was very consistent characterization.
Mm-hmm.
Instigated nicely without being pushy. You know, had serious moments, but then played off of kind of the humor of being small.
Yeah.
Well. ended up befriending a giant death robot. Yeah,
Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm. Gibraltar. So that was probably my favorite DM4, but I'm kind of blessed. I've had a lot of great players, great characters in my games.
Yeah, we have a lot of really good players that we've been blessed to work with.
All right, my next question for you guys. What is your most memorable NPC or pet that became a lot bigger than you ever anticipated?
All right. I'll take this one.
You got that one, Ferris?
Is
Ferris Mueller?
Yep, Ferris Mueller, my mule. Yeah. But I was going to say Elder Steven.
Elder Steven.
Yeah.
Our campaign?
From your campaign. Because he was just a throwaway character. You guys needed someone to, like, sell you a health potion or something. I was like, okay, cool. There's a dude on the other side of town. He sells health potions. You're like, what's his name? And it was shortly after we had talked on Don't Evolve Me about naming random NPCs Steven to show that they're not important. And I was like, his name's Elder Steven. Sweet. So then you guys wanted to, like, hang out with him, chat with him. You, like, did yard work for him and, like, got some information. And he just became increasingly important. And honestly, little spoiler alert, Elder Steven, he's coming back.
Good.
FYI.
I'm happy he's coming back.
He's
you
got to
pull him in.
Yeah.
He's the Kraken, isn't he?
Like, one-off NPC that proves to be incredibly important.
This is kind of a fun one. It all started, like, so we fought this. I played sort of like in fourth edition. We did like a twice a week campaign. Anyways, we had a fight where we fought ochre jellies, and we had these two little ochre jelly minis. And so we, like, I don't know if they befriended one or something like that, but we're basically created the unofficial mascot, and all of us would take turns grabbing that ochre jelly mini, and in the middle of a fight, we would try to sneak it onto the table before the DM would see it. Like, if they went to go take a pee or something, we'd slip, and we called him Henry.
Yeah.
It was Henry the ochre jelly, and he just went kind of like Zoidberg, and so, like, our friend Corey would come back, he'd, you know, come back from the bathroom, and he's like, yeah, so you open up the crypt door, and in front of you is, you know, the Lich Lord or whatever, and then he would look at down at the map and he goes, "Fucking Henry, goddamn!" Just like, you know, and like it was like Rickrolling the DM with Henry.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even a character; he was Henry. He was a troll. It was Henry the Ochre Jelly was my favorite one-off character that turned into a thing for
nice.
It's very fun.
It's
very fun. I think this one kind of counts. So I mentioned earlier there was sort of an intrigue plot that went, like, things go south of Red Wedding House. It takes place in a flying castle. Flying castle, of course, starts to fall because the villains did the villain thing.
Yep.
This is how these things work. So the set piece end battle of that is getting everyone onto an airship trying to get to a teleportation portal while they're being attacked by dragons, right? Mm. Dragon army coming at them, right? Among that group of dragons are, like, a lightning, a storm one, rocks that's supposed to, like, smash into things. And then I had two young red dragons on that field that were going to circle around the ship and try to, like, pick people off, take them off the deck, and just, like, drop them into midair, just roast the place. They managed to, in that battle, kill one of these two young red dragons, right?
Yep.
And then the other character decided that he was going to do what the villain said and kidnap his own daughter and bring them to the Fortress of Doom. So I had to invent a Fortress of Doom, and I gave this character, Cairn, as he showed up, okay, cool, you are now held in the villain's esteem, you get a wing in his Fortress of Doom, you have a position of authority, and here's going to be the first dragon that is going to be under your charge, right? This is your first cadet, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that young dragon that survived his sister dying in that battle.
Wow. All right.
So you have a young, headstrong, grief-stricken red dragon who is a fucking moron, and you have to try to keep him alive and try to get him onto your side. Good luck, Karen.
I love it.
That was great. I think the my favorite moment in that particular like section of the campaign was this. Karen is summoned quickly to his quarters, right? Because one of the other like lords of the wing, one of the other like generals of Ashwing's army, has brought Red to his quarters. He has been beaten to shit because he tried to start a fight with someone bigger than him. And now it's your turn. You have to try to, you know, resolve this situation. Karen, have fun. Yeah.
All right. My next one. Is there a class, or what's the class when someone says, I'm going to be blank? You're like, all right. Okay.
Bart.
Huh?
Bard, usually.
Bard?
Try to be bards.
Yeah. They,
I don't know. Either come out really awesome or just very generic.
Are you saying in the case of, like, this is going to be difficult to DM for, or this might not be, like, a good class for a new player to start with?
It could be both, honestly.
Okay.
I was thinking more the former, where it's like, oh, I really just don't want to deal with this person being this character type of thing.
I don't think I've that
before.
It's really nice. I have had people say, like, I want to play a wizard, I want to play a druid, but they haven't played like D&D before.
Oh yeah.
And, like, these are like, you love the you want them to like lean into the idea, the aesthetics of it, especially, you know, druid, the nature person. You want to do, there is no other class that does that as well as but it's so tricky to like wrap your head around. So it's like, it's not a user-friendly nature class. I wish there was one in D&D.
I've dabbled a little bit in Druid, and the amount of spells that my character has access to is just like, I'm overwhelmed.
All concentration, and you have to balance that with like wild shape, and it's too
much. As well as like spell slots, knowing what you have, what you don't.
Yeah.
I think spellcasters in general, And more like, oh, fine, because I realize that it's way more homework than I have to come up with, and I got to know all these spells and everything and what they do. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. I do like playing as, my favorite class is the wizard, because sometimes the wizard can just say, I cast solve problem, and sometimes it's great, and sometimes it feels like a cop. Yeah. So, like, it really depends on the context.
But isn't it a spell that's actually solve problem, or is it?
It's called wish.
Yeah.
You have to be level 17 before you can cast it.
And you can downcast that wish. It's called Monkey's Paw, where you get the thing, but it twists somewhat, like somehow. And it's not
The genie, I'm going to grant it, but something's going to be off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's funny that you said Bard, because that is the class you recommended me to play for this Fleet campaign.
With Bards, I mean, just, I don't know. In general, I feel like maybe I just don't like that. But they're good characters to be playing, well.
Yeah, I'm excited to play my bard. It's going to be more of a diplomat than a performer, singer person. Yeah. I'm going for that piece of it. Mike.
If I had to pick, I would say barbarian.
Yeah.
Just because they're bland.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen people play awesome barbarians. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's very easy to just fall into a very bland character, bland mechanics, and just not really go anywhere with it. But again, it doesn't really bother me. I don't think it ever makes me go, eh. The other one I would say is probably, that's my initial reaction to whenever anyone comes up with like a homebrew or something from like super obscure, you know, basically homebrew. It's published by somebody on Kickstarter that had like 1,000 buyers.
Yeah.
But some of those can be cool, and I'm happy to like work with them. A lot of times they need some work on my end, because I'm like, no. But just the idea of someone playing homebrew, it always makes me kind of initially go, oh my god, yeah, I'm gonna have to do some work one way or another, or just say no.
That's fair. We got on time, Tom. Good.
What's up?
Good for more. Alright. So yeah. Let's do this. Final thoughts. What do you want my listeners to go home with on D&D as a whole, whether it's the Bleak or just your experience as a DM?
It's a hot take.
Yeah, well, give me a hot take, either on the bleak or like, what's something you want my listeners to like remember to take home with?
Don't get accustomed to liking NPCs in the bleak.
Are you saying I can't like the NPCs?
No, you can. They probably are going to die in a terrible, horrible, brutal way.
You say I can't be very guilt-stricken like I was with Burn? Yeah, oh, I'm going to.
You're just prepared to be guilt-stricken a lot. That's my hot take for this.
I'm going to make a second character with 3 comic books for you.
Good. I have all the more characters to...
All right. Mike.
A hot take? All right, I got the hottest of takes. Unless you pay for someone to DM you or you get really lucky, your random DM that you find is probably really bad. Don't judge the entire game by that one game.
Fair enough.
I've been playing a lot of random for the last like month, and there's a lot of just really bad DMs out there. Sorry.
Well, my experiences have been great.
That's good.
So, well, both my DMs are here, so I'm definitely, yeah. All right, BC Bruins.
Hot take. Something I've come on to recently, there is nothing wrong with min-maxing. As long as you are min-maxing for a specific trait, like a specific thing that you are good at doing, and you build weaknesses into that character, in order to give yourself a strong identity, personality, and playstyle.
Yeah.
Give yourself a role, that's good. Playing just to kill everything and win every fight, that's not so great. But the fundamental idea is there seems to be a divide between people who want to play the game at a high level or play well, and people that want to tell a story. And I really like the idea that both of those can exist at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good take.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. This is your host, Jake, Mike, the Mike Guy Rogers, Tom, TMT, Chatfield, nerdy than you are, Chatfield, and DC Bruins, where you can check them out on YouTube. What is your channel again?
I think it's DC Bruins Media.
All right, yeah, check them out.
Also, if you see any of the end credits of any Text Talks Battletech,
yes, great animator. Check them out, folks. All right, thank you, guys. Right.